do you want it? Cause these dancing feet don't cry to the rhythm.
Would Alex Hale be ready if you guys were to want to go that route, or is he not ready yet?
Potentially.
Considering a move this week at kicker?
I wouldn't say that right now, no.
Matt LaFleur has gone from having public confidence in Braden Arvidsson to whatever that was.
No. Matt LaFleur.
That's not a coach who's happy with his kicker right now.
Well, not even that, though. I just think overall, Matt LaFleur, from the very first press conference that he's ever done to where he is right now doing pressers, is so much better than he's ever been. I mean, he's giving the right kind of information or the wrong kind of information, or don't let you. The Matt LaFleur, when he first got here, I thought talked too much, said too much, gave the media way too much information. And then the Matt LaFleur now, kind of look coy with it. And it just gives you enough and not to let a lot out. I like the Matt LaFleur. Maybe media guys don't, but I like the Matt LaFleur that we're seeing now.
Well, thankfully, we have people like Jason Wilde, who are expert question askers.
He is.
Who speak all things fluent in Matt LaFleur's ways to help us decipher what the head coach is really saying. I'll let the body action after the missed field goal, the missed field goal that Narvison had yesterday, tell the story for me.
Sure.
Slamming your fists and clipboard against your knees,
yep.
The reaction from the head coach.
Yep.
I think the kick Narvison did make was maybe a job-saving kick, but for how long? I think that's the question here. We welcome in from Wilde and Tausch, 9 to noon on ESPN Wisconsin, our friend Jason Wilde. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Gary. Shut up!
Jason wants all the nuggets.
Of course he does.
He wants a free-flowing Matt LaFleur.
Of course he does. He was Matt LaFleur's free-flowing earlier, not now. Different guy.
Yeah, he's. I think he's actually gotten a lot better from the perspective of actually, if you ask a good question, you will be rewarded. Now,
yes.
They may be long questions sometimes, in my case, but I don't think that was him playing coy. I think that was him today keeping his options open, because he was asked yesterday, you know, how can you keep running Narvison out there when he's missing one kick a game? And his response was, absolutely. We did it later on, and he responded and made his kick. I think anytime you use words like absolutely, and then you stop and think, all right, this dude's now 12 for 17, and he had another miss wiped out, so he's basically missed six kicks, and all of them to the right. And, oh, by the way, none of them from longer than 50 yards. He hasn't even had a 50-yard or longer attempt this season, and he's got this percentage. So, you know, if he was 12 of 17, but like 8 of them were 50-yarders, and he had hit like half of them, maybe you would have a different attitude. But all these kicks that he's missed, like, these are kicks that in 2024, the expectation isn't that you make them. I mean, I don't know if this is still true because I didn't check the last 2 weeks of games, but going into the Rams game, in the NFL, like 139 field goal attempts from under 40 yards had been attempted on the season, and only one had been missed, and it was by Braden Narvison. So I thought he was today keeping his options open. Look, you know, Rob and I were talking about this after that exchange as we were heading back upstairs to our offices, and I said, you know, I think he left the door open, obviously, for Alex Hale. But there's some hoops that you have to jump through in order for him to get on the roster. It's not as simple because he's been designated as the International Pathway Program player. You can't just elevate him for game day. You have to sign him to your 53-man roster. And then you have to, if you decide that you want to try and get him back onto the practice squad as your IPP guy, you have to release him and expose him to the waiver wire, and then re-sign him to the practice squad as your IPP guy. So I don't know, unless they're really, truly willing to make a change, I think that's probably unlikely, but the fact that he left the door open tells you that he is definitely not pleased.
So this always happens, right? Insert fan base wants X player gone because of lack of performance, right? And the typical question is, well, who's the suitable replacement? And I don't think I could say with a high degree of certainty that Alex Hale, affectionately referred to as the skipper, is a suitable replacement. Now, I will bring up another name, Jason. You brought it up a couple of weeks ago. But Brandon McManus fits under the category of suitable replacement from an experience and talent level. 81% of his kicks have been made over 10 seasons. He's kicked in challenging environments in Denver. I know the ball travels well there, but it can be some dicey considerations as well with regard to weather. He's a free agent in the news for a lot of the wrong reasons. That's why he's a free agent. Would the Packers ever go down this path, in your opinion? Should they?
Yeah, I mean, look, he obviously... he's been cleared by the NFL of any quote-unquote wrongdoing. Like, he's not going to be suspended. But, you know, two flight attendants from a team flight from the Jaguars accused him of groping them on the team flight. When that came to light in what I believe is a civil suit, the team he was subsequently with, released him. So the idea that the Packers would be willing to re-sign him is directly proportional. Their willingness is directly proportional to how many more kicks Braden Arvidsson misses, right? Sooner or later, if you continue to miss kicks, they're willing to even consider a guy that had obviously this kind of besmirch his reputation. And it's not like the league found him innocent of any inappropriate conduct. They found, and I'm quoting here, insufficient evidence that he had violated the personal conduct policy. So that's a little different than he didn't do anything wrong. So we'll see. But once this came to light in June, the Washington Commanders cut him right away. And so they obviously, in their opinion, felt like they could find some other kicker who didn't have this baggage attached to him. Whether or not the Packers, to your point, Greg, the problem is most of the other alternatives are not any better. And quite frankly, at this point, your kicker has missed more kicks than the guy that you decided you couldn't handle having as your kicker anymore, Anders Carlson. Like, and the weather hasn't even turned yet. Like, Anders made like his first 16 kicks last season. This guy's obviously struggled out of the gate when the weather's been largely nice.
Yeah, I mean, and that's hard to take. And the Packers won big, and so I guess it's not that big of a deal to them yet. But we know at some point you're going to need your kicker to win some games for it. I think if you look,
you want
around,
this guy? Do you want Brandon McManus? Now put yourself in the locker room now, right? Right, your team is, I don't know, people want to say, you look ahead to how last season, or look back to how last season ended, missed kick. That's part of the reason why Anders Carlson doesn't have a job. You cannot let a game slip through your fingers in this division, regular season or come playoff time with a kicker. That can't settle in well with the locker room.
Well, the problem that
this dude,
the problem that I have, Greg, that's a good question. 20 years, 30 years ago, I'd say yes automatically right away, but the NFL is a new, different landscape right now. And that's what you're dealing with. And the Packers are I should say, very pristine organization where they normally don't take those kind of chances. They just don't. They just stay away from those things that's going to add other things inside their locker room. They've got a good locker room right now, a young locker room, but I think it's good. I just don't know if that really upsets the apple cart, even though he's found innocent, or it just doesn't. I'll be honest with Jason, and I'll let him answer the question, but for me, it just doesn't feel right, and I just have to go on field. My answer would be no.
Yeah, and all I'm saying is that sooner or later you get to the point where you miss enough kicks and maybe you do lose the game. I mean, look, you can argue he missed two kicks against the Vikings. They lost that game by two. He said it himself. Like, that's on him. You lose a game. Let's say you're trailing the Texans by two with 4 seconds left, and you trot him out there for a 49-yard game winner, and he pushes it wide right because that's what he does with all of his misses. do you then say, okay, we finally reached the point where we're willing to make a change, even if it means bringing in a guy that we're not comfortable with? Again, I don't know how Goody feels about this. Like, this is a team that once signed, you know, Corin Robinson after a DUI. Like, that's a pretty serious charge. I remember, you know, Cliff Kristol asking, what are you going to do if this guy drives drunk and kills somebody? Which I've never seen Ted Thompson freeze more than when that question was directly posed to him. And so, you know, again, I'm not sure that in the landscape of questionable behavior, I don't know where this ranks for an NFL team deciding whether or not to bring a guy in, but I would be willing to bet that guys in the locker room and certainly fans, if you lose a game because you stuck by your kicker too long, then they will be much more tolerant of questionable behavior. I would also add this. I just don't know who else is out there. And, you know, I watched Sunday Night Football last night when I was finishing up writing, and, you know, Greg Joseph, who had made 8 straight kicks going into that game, missed a pair of them in a game that they lost by 10, and they also chose to go for it on 4th down while in field goal range because he had missed the first one. And so, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens, and that was a guy that was in camp with the Packers. So I don't know if there's a clear-cut, oh, this guy would be such an ideal upgrade, we should sign him type of guy.
Gary and I are going to chat about rookies coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Jason. Is there a rookie who has stood out to you the most of the Packers rookie class?
Yeah, for me, it's Evan Williams. Now, that doesn't mean that the other guys have not been good players. It doesn't mean that the other guys might not have greater roles by the time we get to the end of the season. But Evan Williams was a guy that from the very beginning of training camp, you looked at him and were like, oh, there's something a little bit special about this guy. And I took a lot of grief for saying that, you know, he wears 33 and he looks like Micah Hyde with the way he plays the game. But I'll never forget writing a story about Micah Hyde and every single person I talked to, Kirk Ferentz, some assistants at Iowa, Packers assistants, teammates, Aaron Rodgers, they all said the same thing. That guy is a football player. And I don't know if there's, Gary, tell me if I'm wrong, but there aren't many better compliments that can be paid to a guy than that guy's just a football player. That is, it's a simple phrase, but it carries a lot of weight. And I think Evan Williams, you know, despite what they've gotten out of Edger and Cooper in flashes, despite how much Javon Bullard has played, I think Evan Williams is the clear-cut choice.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. Of course, we never disagree, right? How about that? But
LaFleur's press conference.
I caught Gary in a disagreement. You know why?
Why?
Because usually you say to Jason, I would agree.
Yeah.
And here you just said, I don't disagree, but, and you're going to give another rookie's name.
Adrian Cooper, to me,
there you go.
I think, slowly but surely, is playing his way into a starting role there. I don't keep track of how many downs that they played, but it feels like he is playing more than Isaiah McDuffie. And then it feels like they're kicking Quay Walker then down to the other side over there, and looks like Cooper's playing the middle. I think, to me, he's more of a – and we have – is it Hooper or Hopper? Who's the other guy, the linebacker?
Hopper. It would have been easier if it was Hooper and Cooper.
Unfortunately – like Valentine and Valentine.
Yeah.
Exactly. It would be nice if he'd make that change. But you're – all right, just for the record, Cooper – or Copper, I guess we could call him, too. It could go either way. But Cooper played 38 snaps yesterday out of a possible 58. So that was 66%. He played the second most snaps among linebackers. Quay Walker played all 58. Compared to him, Isaiah McDuffie with 26.
Oh, wow.
And Eric Wilson with 14. So your instincts, as always, are right on the money.
Wow, I didn't realize. And that's a lot more than I thought.
So, yeah, he's so definitely, he's definitely moving into the mix, as you said. Now, Matt LaFleur did talk to us today about him and did acknowledge that he is still mistake-prone, which is what rookies are. But they clearly have the willingness to say, hey, we're going to live with these mistakes. We did it with the offensive guys last year, and then we'll come out on the other side better for it. But in the short term, we might get a little irritated with some of the mistakes these dudes make.
And this game, you know, they didn't get interceptions. They actually got turnovers off the fumble variety type. And to me, that was a little bit different than what we've seen out of this defense so far.
Yeah, look, the turnover, however they're getting them, right? They obviously, we know about the interceptions, but, you know, the stat just blows my mind. They are six games into the season, and they have 17 takeaways. In Joe Barry's final season last year, they had 18 takeaways, but it took them all 17 games to get there. That's a big difference. I mean, they're going to surpass it or tie it, I would think, on Sunday. I if they go without forcing a turnover against a team that I think is as good as the Texans are, they might not win the game then. But the fact that they've had that many takeaways in a six-game span, that's not luck. I mean, some of it might be, right? One or two, you know, the fumbled snap yesterday or whatever it might be, that some of that is. But this is a conscious effort, and it's interesting, you know, Domofsky and I were both asking questions about it today. LaFleur has they have a meeting every Thursday, and they call it the ball meeting. Not LaMelo ball, not Lonzo ball, just the ball meeting. Russ ball, ball jars. That's all they do is talk about takeaways. And it's not something they had done before. LaFleur said other places that he'd been had done it, but they had not done it. And Halfley really wanted to have that. And I think the first person that I remember talking about it was actually Malik Willis after they won their two games with him as the starter, saying, hey, you haven't turned the ball over at all in a tough spot. And that was when he said, well, we have these meetings. And so, you know, it emphasizes both ball security offensively and taking the ball away defensively. And you know this as well as anyone, Gary, having played in the league. We say this phrase all the time, you get what you emphasize. And they have emphasized takeaways more than they did in the previous defensive regime, and they're getting results.
It is absolutely working. It's been unbelievable to watch. Willie and Tausch is 9 to noon, Monday through Friday on ESPN Wisconsin. Packers will take on the Houston Texans, as Jason mentioned. Sunday, it's a noon kick from Lambeau Field. Should be a good one. 4-2 Packers, 5-1 Texans. We appreciate it, Willie. Thanks. We'll check in again next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
You do the same. We'll wrap up the hour with some final thoughts. Look ahead to hour number two. Get Gary a Kleenex and some bread pudding after this.